and welcome. My name is Joe Shirey. I'm an architect with Microsoft. We're here today to talk a little bit about architecture, architects, and mentoring, and kind of what that means. So in my experience, what I've seen is that if you're an architect, you end up in a position where you might have to mentor folks, and in fact, it's a good practice to mentor folks. If you want to build a nice team around you, I kind of subscribe, and if you ever followed American football, there's a coach by the name of Bill Walsh, who was a big coach during the 1980s. And if you followed him, he won a number of championships during the 80s and then retired. And following him, there were a ton of his coaches that left and won Super Bowls without him after leaving his program, which kind of told you not only was a great coach, but he was also a great teacher of other coaches. And when I look at architects, I think of that. I think of how can you be an architect to be a great teacher of other architects and bring them up and make yourself a better team around you. And most of the great architects I know have great teams that are around them, and they're always striving to make their architects better. So we have with us a panel today, and I'll let each person introduce themselves, and I'll start over here.
Thank you, Joe. My name is Pat Weichel. I'm an architect evangelist with DPE US Public Sector. Focus on our government customers and helping them sort of raise the bar with architecture as well as their development lifecycle.
My name is Denny Boynton, and I'm an architect evangelist. I'm based in St. Louis, and I cover the north central part of the central region of the country.
And I'm Micha Kral. I am just an architect, and I'm from Redmond, so I must be right.
My name is Michael Stiefel, and I guess I'm the odd person out since I don't work for Microsoft. I'm an independent software consultant out of Boston, Massachusetts.
Excellent. So when I talk to people, one of the questions, and talk to them about mentoring, particularly people that want to be mentored, one of the first questions I get from folks is, how do I find a mentor? And so I thought I'd ask that to the panel. We'll start over here with Michael and see.
How does one find a mentor? Well, the best way I know to talk about this is how I found my initial mentors. And I was actually very lucky early on in my career, and even before I even thought of becoming an architect, I had two mentors. One was a language guy, and the other was a database guy. And I learned the different perspectives on how to build an application, and they were very generous with their time. They taught me how to treat other people, how to be open to other people, how to think about things from different perspectives. And these, of course, were useful as a developer and became even more useful, you know, want to become an architect. But you had to have someone who's both the right personality and that you could relate to as well as a technical expertise.
That makes sense. Miha, do you have any thoughts on that?
So did you say how you find the mentor or what the mentor did to you? Anyway, so I would rather go, probably next question will be, why do you need a mentor? So from my perspective, let's start from here very quickly. The mentor needs to be someone who actually gives you a totally different perspective. Is senior enough that you trust and believe, but shouldn't be the one who is touting exactly the same poem which you are trying to do anyway. How do you find it? I would say one of the competencies for every architect has to be leadership. And as part of the leadership, you simply grow your network. If your network is small, then you are still kind of a small architect on a competency growing scale. And as you grow, you add mentors. And personally, I think I had 6 mentors in my life, and now I have 5, just because the first one was back in IBM days, and you kind of can't take the mentor across the organizational boundaries. So I still have 5 mentors. Personally, I still think that once you find a good mentor who is your chemistry-wise good match, you never let him go.
No. So I know a lot of companies have some formal mentoring programs. I'm kind of curious, do you think the formal mentoring or informal mentoring is better?
Well, from formal mentoring, if you mean where you actually have an established on-paper relationship with somebody, I don't know. I've worked in both, and so kind of just adding on to the initial question as to how do you find them, I've had the good fortune to work in just about all areas of IT over the course of my career, starting in, you know, database administration. I've worked in the data center development and you know, moving into more of an architecture role. And in each one of those stages, they weren't necessarily the same company, obviously, so it was always going in and trying to find, you know, the people within an organization that it made sense for me to create that mentoring relationship with. I think if from an established program, I think it's good. I don't know that it's any more effective, though, than finding the right person And a big part of that is credibility. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things when we get around to talking about what makes a good mentor. I look for the people that, I've read their books. I've seen them speak, and they have that credibility with me already, so I can, I know that, and I think just adding on to what Miha said, when you find that mentor that really works, I still talk to the guy I started my career with. He's still a mentor to me because he, as I've progressed, he's progressed as well, and so there are still things I can go back and learn and hang on to those relationships. So I don't know that a formal mentoring program necessarily helps, or hinders for that matter.
That makes sense. Patrick?
I would probably add on to that, onto the side of, informal relationships seem to work better as long as they are not impactful in the day-to-day life of your mentor, yeah. Right? The implication being that, formal relationships, unfortunately, in the corporate world or even in the government space, sort of imply HR policies and fun things like that. Now it becomes a task item on the things that you have to do.
It's a measurement.
It's something that someone completely outside of the process of the mentoring role is now judging your performance in that space. And really, at the end of the day, to Miha's point, this is about building a network of community. Building a community, a network of people that there's mutual respect back and forth. As you progress, they progress, et cetera, and new ideas encourage. So actually, I'm more on the informal side personally.
Let me jump in because it's actually interesting. In my last the job I had before I came to Microsoft, there was actually a coaching and mentoring group that was part of an enterprise architecture team. And here's an example of where the institutionalized mentoring program doesn't work so well. What they did is they decided we want to have the best folks in our organization go be mentors to the solutions architects and really to lead developers too, to help bring them along. But it was an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically, they said, you're going to be that guy's mentor, go mentor him. And while we probably had some credibility in that organization, the personal relationship wasn't there, and it was more something that was imposed on them. So they're thinking, I'm trying to get my work done, and this guy wants to meet with me every 2 weeks to mentor me, And so that's, I think if it becomes a mandated thing, then you can run into problems there. But if it's mandated and perhaps you have the option to go choose and build that relationship and become,
absolutely,
find your mentor, then it has a better chance of success.
It's an opt-in type
program. I don't think that I mean, if there is no chemistry, mentorship is always like a two-way volunteering type of approach, and you can't stand the manager who is forced on you.
Yeah.
What about the mentor whom you should kind of kindly work with? Maybe I should steer here just to make a clarification between a mentorship and apprenticeship. We a little bit touched on that before. Mm-hmm. Let me be very clear my perspective here. Mentor will not make you better, architect. Mentor is not the person who will improve your professional skills. Mentor is actually the one who will help you to see a different perspective and actually will tell you, maybe you will never be a great architect. Maybe it's a time to change your profession. Mentor gives you different perspective.
Well, I slightly disagree with that, because to the extent that soft skills are important, it's very often a mentor who helps you develop those soft skills. So maybe directly I agree with you that a mentor, as several people mentioned before, has to be outside the day-to-day
right.
activity.
Mentor will help you grow.
The mentor, has to be able to give you the perspective and help you grow. And some of that is, maybe you should look at this. Maybe you need to be a better, convincer. So they do help you grow, not in the sense of a boss you set skills for and that this is the next thing you do, but they do help you grow.
Mm-hmm. I can give you, sorry to intervene, a great example what a mentor did to me in the past 10 years. So 7 years ago, I literally went to my mentor and said, look, I work for the whole Balkan region in Eastern Europe. I did anything and everything there. There is no way for me. What can I do now? I don't like management. I want to be individual contributor and rah, 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 rah. And I was crying on his shoulder. And he looks at me and goes, you know what? Get over it. If you want to progress career, you need to exit the region. And I packed and went to New Zealand. So it has nothing to do with my ability to be an architect. And that's where apprenticeship kicks in.
No, mm-hmm. it's a valid distinction. But yeah, and I think both of them really help you out in your career. I think there's another valid point is that there's a the relationship, building that relationship, that network with folks and being able to find folks that can be a mentor is very important, and being able to choose one. And I think that there's an organizational component where organizations can support that but not enforce it. And when they support it and reward it, I think it's a good mix.
I mean, certainly it can be part of a senior person's goals that you are responsible to look for mentors. We can't mandate that anybody be a particular mentoree, but you seek out people, make yourself open, and mentorship can be encouraged.
I totally agree with that. So let's lump mentorship and apprenticeship together for right now. And I tend to see the career path, whether right or wrong, people come up through if you're a solution architect, you come up through the development team, you might be a senior dev lead, you might be a senior engineer, and those folks tend to aspire to be an architect at some point. Yeah. What type of skill gap, I'll start over here, do you see between that senior dev engineer and what an architect would be?
Well, I think part of that, from my perspective, is the definition of what an architect is, right? And I think, we've certainly had a lot of internal discussions around that. I think from an application architect perspective, certainly the skill sets of how a system is engineered, put together, et cetera, is extremely important, as well as, it's an obvious next step beyond the senior dev sort of role. But, the additional, skill sets that perhaps senior dev folks haven't been exposed to is the why, the translation of why this type of engineering platform is important to the business that I'm trying to support this application with. In that type of role, I see the architect actually being the revolving door of information, the translation mechanism between the business community and the technical community, and vice versa.
Yeah, you just hit on the point I was going to make as far as being the conduit between the customer, between what the customer is asking for from a business requirement standpoint and helping to realize that as a technological solution. I think that developers tend to be, stay very heads down in code and focused on the tasks at hand. I think the one other thing that was especially important for me personally to develop was looking past the current project. And so, we all get involved in projects, we drive them forward, and then we get to the end and go, wow, that was great. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now what's my next project? And I think a very important, thing for developers who are aspiring to move into that architecture role is to begin thinking not only why, we always talk about the big picture view, it's not just the width, but it's also, how far out. What I do today, what is the impact going to be 18 months from now? Right. What other things, from a business standpoint, may impact this thing that I'm building today, and how's that going to fit with the larger architecture of my organization?
Or why is this technology applicable, for our
Precisely.
Business or et cetera?
That makes sense.
A great point.
Makes total sense.
Yep.
Mia, any thoughts?
Well, usually when people become architects or want to become architects, they always think that, it's a huge technology stack you need to know, and there's a little bit of a soft skill stuff on top. But actually, the whole point is that if you look to the real architect profession, it's a huge amount of soft skill stuff, and it's a tiny little bit technology, almost irrelevant down at the bottom. So looking, your question was, what are the gaps, right?
Yep.
So from first, I see when I mentor people, I really push them to the wall and try to explain that architects are nothing to do with technology. If you are coming from technology background, you have a fair chance, but you have no advantage above someone who came from, the cooking school. On the other side, so I would say from competences perspective, technology is one bucket. I'll talk about it a little bit later. Personal bucket, where I'm really looking, you need to be a leader, which means architects will never get a formal, official leadership, official kind of a chain of control and command. I mean, get over it. We'll never have them. We are not managers. So you need to be able as a leader to have that informal organizational knitting of relationships. And the second one is communication skills. If you prefer not to talk, if you are rather introvert, if you rather kind of a listen, probably you can't verbalize the message, you can't explain especially high level concepts and abstractions. Then you have a bucket of the business skills, I would say, especially people I mentor, usually they focus in there because I'm coming from that train of thought that not everyone can be an architect. I think that architect is born, not bred. So I'm just trying to help them to be shaped, to be better architects. And that shaping happens in three areas. One is strategic skills, thinking far into the future and seeing predictive patterns. The second one is tactics and processes. So you can bring a predictable, high-quality results again and again and again to the table. You are not just a hero. And the third one would be organizational dynamics. So you are able to recognize, let's say you walk into the room full of engineers and architects. Who is the leader in there? That literally in 20, 30 seconds, you see people, how they work, organize, and actually you spot the one who is controlling the room. Seven competencies, and the one which I would say people struggle most with, especially if they're from technical background, strategy. Strategy is the weakest one for the current breed of architects, I see.
Well, I think I have a slightly different take on the matter, agreeing with you fundamentally, but to me, the most important thing that an architect is a problem solver. And to be a problem solver, you have to make use of whatever information you have at your disposal. Sometimes it's technical. What you have to be able to do is look at a situation and determine what the critical failure points are. Okay? I think I have an advantage as being an architect. I was trained as an engineer, not as a software person. Okay? So I understood from the get-go, we got taught what systems were. And every system, whether it's a mechanical system or a software system, has certain critical failures. And some of them are solved in the political domain. Some of them are solved, you know, explaining to the CTO in ROI, or the CFO in ROI terms, what that is. And sometimes it's realizing that this thing is not going to scale because the algorithm you're using goes as E to the N, and there's no way that's going to scale. And you're, as the architect, maybe the only one who realizes that. So, you know, it's a multi-dimensional problem. One dimension is clearly technology. Other dimensions are business, leadership, and these are, you know, that's the way I like to think about it. And the other thing is that I tend to work with small to medium-sized companies. And there, very often, the architect is a role, not a position. There are times where I still have to do coding, all right? And I have to develop this mindset, and this goes to the point that Mihai was making. Now I'm a developer, and now I'm an architect, and I better know which way I'm thinking.
So you do agree with
me? Yeah, I do agree with you. But I also think that it's important for developers to understand a little bit about architecture, because if they're coming across a development problem that has an architectural implication and I don't realize it, I'd like them to tell me right
this
away.
This is turning into what is an architect.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
Well, I'll give you my one also, so long as we're going what's an architect. And it's I agree with what everybody else said, but the business alignment one is the one that amazes me. And I know you've said on some, and both me and I are certified architects out of the Microsoft program, and we sit on these boards. And I'm amazed. People come and present their solutions to us, and we'll try. My goal is always to get to the root of why, from a business perspective, are you doing this in the first place? Why'd you even take on the project? And I'm amazed at the number of people that can't explain it in financial terms. They can't go down. They couldn't sell it to a CFO if their life depended on it. And, you know, so that's always kind of my biggie that I'm looking for is, if you're doing a project and you're the architect of the project, how the heck can you make any decisions if you don't know what the business benefit and what it's going to cost? And, I mean, you can do it maybe in a rough calculation, but how do you know how many servers you're going to need? How do you know what the fault tolerance is?
Well, hopefully, presumably, this came about because there was an ROI discussion somewhere before you even got to writing an architect.
Absolutely correct.
Presumably.
Absolutely correct.
So, it doesn't always work that way, but yeah, I'm amazed.
Back to mentoring, I just wanted to say it's probably good to say, I would say every decent architect needs to mentor others as long as he's an architect, needs to, because that's the way how you revalidate your own self. And also you need to have your own mentor. It's almost like going to a therapy, right? You need, the therapist also needs to have someone who will cleanse him permanently.
Well, the therapist has a therapist.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
They do.
Can I touch on something that Michael said that I thought was really interesting? As you said, a lot of organizations that the architect is not a position, it's a role. And I've had a lot of experience with that as well. And it's interesting because I think, let's be realistic, architecture happens whether there's an architect or not. Okay, I mean, if you've got a developer who's focused on nothing but code, there's architecture being created there that's going to persist.
Maybe when they make the
if project
statement that determines what happens, but it happens.
Exactly. So I mean, I think that kind of brings it back to this mentoring aspect of, I mean, you have to start thinking about the fact that, you know, even though you may not be talking to the architect,
right,
you probably are talking to an architect.
Right.
Just in a different capacity, I think, than you know, when you start talking about the formal definition of what an architect is. But it happens whether there's one or not. Yeah.
So we talked about a couple of different skills. I've heard leadership, communication. I heard some business alignment mm-hmm. skills. I heard problem solving.
Should we talk how mentoring, what we mentor, and how we mentor?
Well, I'm kind of curious. That's kind of my question is how do you take somebody who says, I really want to get better at the business skills, or I think I can be a better communicator. What advice do you give them?
Here's one suggestion. Read the Wall Street Journal every day.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to learn about business, that's the best place to learn it.
I know. Yeah. Your thoughts?
I will, let me go on more kind of a semantic general level, all right? I always talk to my mentees, and I try to see actually two dimensions. What's their level of commitment? And what's the level of capability? Because how much willing they are, you know, are they on fire? Some of them are kind of a mild, some of them are hot. And, you know, are they literally at the, you know, level zero of their capability maturity, or are they really advanced already? And based on that, there are completely different techniques what I use. Because if they are really kind of a, you know, someone push them in front of me and they go, yeah, I would like to progress my career, but I'm nowhere. And go, okay, this guy literally needs telling and selling,
mm-hmm.
right? And you go and try to explain it's actually good, and you know, it's an uplifting procedure what you do. Once you go and they kind of become a little bit more enthusiastic and still incompetent in what they do, then it's very much trying to do the typical coaching,
mm-hmm.
right? What did you do? How you do it? Should you do it better? How did you evaluate yourself and so on?
But don't you ever look at someone and say they could be an architect and they don't realize it?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I've had that
all the time.
Personally, yeah. I have a strong belief architects are self-selected out from the IT community. They just pop out. I never saw someone who would be a quiet person in a corner, go to talk to him and go, "Man, you are an architect potential." That happened to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I found. I mean, we were talking about the concept of just the developer doing the architecture. There's one guy I can think of in particular, and I talked to him about it. And actually, he just said, "You know what? I like writing code, but he has the communication skills. He has the ability to look beyond what he's doing. All the key things that we've talked about. He just wants to write code." That's what he enjoys doing.
Made the choice.
Yeah, he made a choice to do it.
And there is an advantage of developers becoming architects is because they remember what the trenches were like.
That's right.
Very true.
Well, so the best military leaders are the ones that have been to war.
That's right.
You know, so that's and that was something interesting. You said, I think you said someone who from cooking school has as good a chance of being a good architect, and I'm curious why you say that.
I don't know
that I've ever met a non-technical person that could step in and actually tell technical people how to develop software.
So I think that there are two major attributes what architects need to be able to do. One is abstraction. And abstraction is the typical, I mean, you see kids in school, some can do math and abstraction, some can't. So I think that doing abstraction is a born skill. It's not something you can really learn in and enjoy. And the second one, I would say, is, as I said, leadership and communication. So you can actually go out and reach and just do that naturally. Some people are natural. Some, you know, you can't be born to be a leader. I mean, just look at, you know, greatest leaders of this country and you will see. You can't teach that skill.
But
the other one where I also kind of go through. Are you aware of a Myers-Briggs personality test?
Yes.
On four dimensions?
Yes. Yep.
My personal belief at the moment, I still want to do the test on the hindsight with all the existing architects I know. I think that all the architects I know are always thinkers, which is T, and intuitive. So they are TJ. In you know, the first letter, are the introvert or extrovert, mm-hmm. is irrelevant, and the last one, are they judgers or perceivers, is irrelevant. But if that's true, that everyone is a thinker and everyone is intuitive, then actually creates less than 12% of a population which is capable to be architects. And what I do as a mentor, maybe I'm too harsh, but I tell people, I don't think that you will become a Picasso of architecture.
The presumption, though, is that people can't grow using Myers-Briggs, and we don't need to get into that, but people can learn to change, right? People can learn to think.
Or for example, they right? may not realize they're good abstract thinkers because they never trained to be abstract thinkers.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think leadership is a component of confidence as well. Right. You may have a very strong sense to lead, but simply don't have the confidence at that particular point in time to step forward and do that. However, with mentoring, trying to bring it back around for you, right? With mentoring, you can get people into a position where they can become technical leaders. And again, the reason I called that out on Miha was pretty much it comes back to the credibility thing I mentioned earlier, you know, from both a mentoring and from the architect standpoint, that if I have someone who's basically laying out what they want me to do or what they're going to direct a team to do, but don't have the background, they don't really know what's involved with that, that to me leads to a credibility
or
issue.
Or can't convince people in a discussion.
Right. Yeah, right. So, okay.
So from leadership perspective, how many of you play online games? How many of you are the guild leaders or pack leaders or platoon leaders?
I don't have time for that.
You see, because I think that this is one of the great new ways that you actually can spot leaders. Look, I play Guild Wars a lot, which is an online kind of a fighting game, you know, a fantasy game. I'm a level 20 Guild Wars master monk. I heal, so I don't fight. Whenever I create...
When I grew up, we figured that out playing street games.
Miha's a lover, not a fighter.
What I want to say is that, you know, I see leaders in online gaming. You see leaders and followers automatically.
Well, you always, you definitely always do. I think it's an interesting point because I've seen this debate, which is, are the skills required to be an architect, are those born skills, or can they be learned skills? And I sit in the middle, personally. I think that, there's some innate skills that you have when you're born.
Otherwise, you devalue the whole topic of mentoring and architecture.
Yeah, and then mentoring becomes...
But you have to realize that until you can predict accurately when someone's born what skills they have, this is actually an irrelevant argument because unless you try to develop them, you know, you won't know whether someone's born with them.
Yep, lots of people claim that if you have to be born with the skills, then that it's not a profession. And I have to disagree. Sports is a profession. But, hey, let's be frank. You have to be born with the genes to be a basketball player in the NBA league. Otherwise, you'll be just a backstreet boy throwing hoops. No matter how badly you want to play in NBA, you will not join the profession. Same goes for medical school. You need to have certain criteria.
But you see, that's why I decided I wasn't going to be a theoretical nuclear physicist, because I realized in that world of theoretical physics, there's no place for second-rate people. In the software business, well, you know, you could be second-rate and have a good career.
Talk about yourself.
I was talking generally. If the shoe fits.
So, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit because I want to try a different topic, which is with a void of mentorship or apprenticeship or those types of things, I see a lot of people turn into the blogs and turning to things like that as a means to try and get and develop their skills. I'm kind of curious for your thoughts of whether that's an effective form of developing those skills or if it's lacking in certain areas.
No.
I agree that they're not a way of developing skills, but if you already have the skills, it's a way of thinking about the problem or seeing different perspectives, but no, forgetting the skills, absolutely not.
So why I'm saying no, go back to what I said at the beginning. Mentor helps you to see a different perspective. As long as you are roaming the web and there is so much information, you will naturally go and stick to something what is in your same perspective. So you will not get a different point of view. Why would I read a blog from someone whom I actually see that I disagree with him?
But I do that.
And the second thing is that person is not talking to me, which means that he can't craft the message on a blog to me. And even if I respond
so
on a blog
to books?
Him,
so you don't read books.
I do read books, but they are not my mentoring material. They are my learning material, not the mentoring material.
Blogs and white papers. All these things are great educational tools. Right. But I mean, I think that comes back to the fundamental difference you made at the beginning. Is it's not the education; it's helping to mentor in all the areas. And I do agree that it's not. There is something to the one-to-one relationship between a mentor and someone who's being mentored
personalized
that helps them grow and has an impact that reading a blog post or a book is not going to have.
But you're still limited by the worldview of your mentor. This problem is not going to go away.
No, there is not a world. Again, this is the difference between mentorship and apprenticeship.
You get a worldview whether or not you realize you're getting a worldview.
I don't mentor any one of you, but any of my mentees can tell you the only thing I really do, I slap them out from their comfort zone so badly.
Miha, you're giving them a worldview.
Not my view.
Miha, you've expressed your worldview, but you've expressed your worldview today. You can't get away from that perspective you have.
If you go to the therapy session with a psychiatrist, you don't get his view. He just helps you to find your own way. And that's what mentoring should be.
That's a very idealized view of what therapy is all about. Now, do we have to make this a discussion about what therapy is and architects are really therapists for developers?
So you can make an appointment with my wife.
Mentoring is a type of occupational therapy. Is that what you're saying?
I think I might need some therapy.
You see, I am my wife's lifetime project, and you see how great
I am. No, and you're leveled what, Guild?
Just remember, you're saying this in a format they'll be around forever.
Scrape it.
But in terms of blogs, I think there is some value in that. Clearly, anyone can say anything in the blog sphere, and it either instantly becomes true, unfortunately, or it instantly gains some level of credibility. And I think what's interesting, from a mentorship perspective, at least those who are aspiring to be architects should use that form as a mechanism to craft their ability to convey ideas in, at least, I don't want to say on paper, but, at least in an electronic format. The ability to write and convey ideas, especially
may I challenge you on that? If you are a young aspiring architect with a, let's say, weak spine and weak self designed view of the world, how do you know what's on the blog is correct or not?
You don't, and I'm not advocating that. In fact, what I'm saying is the exact opposite. It's a great way.
Because the core problem of the blogs is they are completely unfiltered, unverified, single person point
of
view.
Totally, yeah. Totally.
I mean, even if you read a book or editorial or Wall Street Journal, they are peer reviewed and heavily scrutinized.
Absolutely.
While blogs are blurb.
But
right.
But in all honesty, blogs that have consistency problems over time, they have problems, tend not to get, they tend to fall off the map because people, the community out there will actually just, people will comment and go, this guy doesn't know anything, and people stop reading it. So, to a certain degree, the online community monitors.
That's true. Newspaper, do you think newspapers and certain publishers, it's all reputation-based. And it's true of blogs, it's true of books.
You look at Scott Goo writes a post about what he ate for breakfast, and he gets 800,000 visitors in the first hour after he posts. Because he's gained the credibility, and he has a reputation for putting things out correctly.
So what did he have for breakfast?
I didn't get it in my feed this morning.
Maybe he did, You need to read his Twitter then.
So, interesting. Now, the other thing I see a lot of people that aspire to get to that level that they don't do, that they can do a better job of, is networking in their own community in an online fashion or offline fashion. Mm-hmm. ISA is doing a good job of building out some of those communities locally.
I think that's a good point, architects tend to be lonely people, and they have to reach out to their professional peers, while developers very often can get that a lot easier in a user group or even in their own organizations.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people I respect and I've learned a lot from have come from, not from the company I work for or anything indirect, it's been relationships you build out in the community. And, that's just such a crucial piece of it.
I'm thinking what you just said. So, yes, architects are far and apart, yet they are much more extrovert than developers.
Yes.
So I think that they have much less of a problem to reach out and grab another architect to talk about.
I agree, but it's hard. Architects don't necessarily flock to the same places.
Look at the example here in Ateket, on that green island, whatever we are with the architecture. It's jam-packed all the time. It's like, it's not because architecture is so sexy or whatever. It's just because I think that we tend to communicate so much more. That's all we do, right? We wave hands.
Or the industry has gotten to the point where they realize that they can't go on in this disorganized way anymore.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
That's a valid point. Very valid point.
Right. Yeah, I think architects tend to sort of create their own groups, and so, you know, you see the developer community come together in user groups and things like that because they're seeking that larger audience to get the information that they need. I think architects that have reached a certain level in their career, I think, have confidence in the things that they know and don't feel that same sense of need. I think where the opportunity is looking for the aspiring architects.
Absolutely.
Looking for those folks who are going, you know, I think I'm doing this already. I want to get a better understanding of
translating the how do I to the why do I.
Why do I, exactly.
But don't you think that's a danger for successful architects that they don't realize the world around them
is
changing?
Absolutely. I think it is. I think it is.
It is?
It hasn't changed in years, Miha.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. I still like my green screen.
So I noticed we have a few people sitting around. I'm curious if anybody has any questions for the panel. Yes.
Yes.
So the question was, what's a good process for finding a mentor?
And what's in it for a mentor?
And what's in it for a mentor? Mm-hmm. I guess, and we talked about this a little bit at the beginning, but it can be a challenge. I personally like the concept of networking within your community. I like having a mentor who's not involved with my day-to-day things, personally, and finding somebody who's willing. And having mentored people, generally, you want, you know, the respect of somebody coming to you and asking for your help. That has a lot to do with it. And I also think mentoring people is a growth potential for the person doing the mentoring. I mean, it really is. And if you find somebody and you ask them, hey, can I, and I've never been one to say, hey, will you mentor me? That's just, I don't know, it just never sounded right, but can I sit down with you for a while? I want some things I want to bounce off you from a career perspective. I'm kind of curious, I respect your opinion and just curious what you might think. I always get a great response from people if I ask that.
So, and in terms of what's in it for the mentor, you know, going back to the practice of being able to articulate ideas. You know, there's an old saying about a student is only as good as his teacher, right? Maybe a great architect or, you know, a great mentor, but that's the ability to convey ideas and literally teach someone how or help them grow is actually a skill set that also needs care and feeding as well.
Yeah, that being said, I've known plenty of brilliant people that I would have loved to have a mentoring kind of relationship with who had no interest. So I think that's the other thing too is just make sure that the person that you're seeking, you know, to fill that role in your career is someone who, you know, is going to enjoy doing it, because it could actually turn out bad for you if they're like, okay, you know, but I think that's just one cautionary tale is you can have bad mentors too.
Absolutely.
I think the other thing I've seen is that most mentors I know aren't the ones that are going to take the initiative either throughout the relationship. That if you want the guidance from somebody and the coaching, that you have to take the ownership of that. And, you know, you don't want to be a pain in the tail about it, but, you have to be the one that initiates to say, hey, I'd like to get together at some point in the future. Curious about your thoughts about something.
And that's for good reason, because a good mentor doesn't want to impose themselves on the mentee.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so what am I getting out from my mentees? Several things. First one, I don't like mentees who don't challenge me. So very much I enjoy being challenged. New perspectives, new problems, new ideas. The second thing is working through mentee also keeps me hands in dirty in more problems than I can physically tackle. So it's almost like jumping somewhere, trying to see how I could fix it, and someone goes and does it instead of you. And you just get back that mental block, was it right or wrong? And the third thing is I'm always working on something, kind of a new model, framework, research, whatever, throwing the idea around. And when I have a mentoring session, I go, you know, what do you think about that? And I can see when the brain starts to go and go, ooh, great, I have the great one. So, you know, I can continue the research. Otherwise, if I just get an answer and go, oh, this is something what, yeah, they figure it out already there and there and there, just go and read an article and go, okay, probably I'm working on a wrong problem space at the moment. So it's a great win-win for me, each and every relationship.
Well, it's the same reason when I teach, I love the questions more. You know, that's the best time. When I learn something teaching is when the questions come.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions out there?
No, we can go on and on with that on our own.
Yes, sir.
Concept of apprenticeship and go together? Are they mutually exclusive approaches to building architects? Or is there some plan of how to build architects and kind of pull those people up from the ranks of the diamond and the rock that you saw?
Okay.
Yeah. So the
in the short term, let me just define.
Let me repeat the question.
Go ahead.
So I believe the question was the difference between mentoring and kind of helping shape somebody's career versus the apprenticeship, which is how am I molding somebody's career in probably a more formal type relationship
versus teaching.
Correct.
So just to define those three, and others can pick on that then. Mentoring is, it's a completely different problem spaces, right? Let me start with teaching. Teaching is when you have a gap in knowledge. Mentoring is when you have a gap in experience. And apprenticeship is when you have a gap in artisanship, right? They're different. You can do all three with the same person, or you can do completely different things with different people.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Yeah, that's pretty good explanation.
That's pretty good. I think that.
why didn't you just lead with that?
we could have started there.
I know that there's, through my career, there have been people that I reported to that provided all three for me. I mean, so it really depends. I always liked when I had a team to try and foster that within my team. I may not have resonated with somebody that worked for me, but. I tried to foster that type of environment.
I always like to deal with people who are smarter than I am.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That helps.
So, but I think it's a great definition. So I do think you can mix those models around. It's not one or the other, and you don't have to go to three separate people to get those things, in my opinion.
Just to make sure your organizational support is behind you if you're going to take anything but an informal relationship. That's the only thing I would add. Everybody wants to spend money on training, but if there's no money available, then you can't go to class, right?
So I think part of your question, or was your question before, how do you find a mentor? Just reach out.
Yeah.
Every person who you think that is worth being your mentor is probably on a level of seniority where he's more than happy to share. It's almost like you know that kind of a paradigm with a candle. Some people think that holding a candle in the flame just for themselves, otherwise if they share it, their candle will get, the flame will get smaller. Once you come to a certain stage and go, share the flame, mine is getting no smaller because of that. And you will see people will reapproach you. Mm-hmm. The second step is then to find, is there a chemistry between two of you? Mm-hmm. If there is no chemistry, don't force it. But anyone whom you find that it's worth becoming your mentor, most probably will respond and will say, absolutely, plan it forward.
Other questions? Those are both great questions. All right. Any other final commentary? Miha, I know you probably have something left to say.
No, just find a mentor. I don't think that an architect without a mentor is an architect. That's just my opinion.
No, and I think that's a valid point. I think that if you are an architect or strive to be one, you should have a mentor.
Is there a doctor without a mentor, like a medicine doctor without someone who is his, not supervisor, but actually mentor?
I think that's the whole purpose of internships, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yep. I agree. Any other final comments?
No, I think.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.